Happy Halloween, everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I have a very, very special treat for you tonight. It is book release day for Earl Jaworski, a.k.a. Dan Howard. His new book is called Down to No Good. One of my favorite authors of all times. I love everything he writes, but I'm particularly fond of his Charlie Miner series. It is a little bit woo-woo supernatural, but in such a fun and such an engaging way, I thought it was totally appropriate that I invite Dan, a.k.a. Earl Jaworski, on the show tonight. So welcome, Dan Howard. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, Pam. Thanks for having me. How are you?
You know, I love this character of Charlie Miner, and I want to kind of just set this up a little bit because I want listeners and readers to understand who this character is and why I'm so crazy about him. You and I met a few years ago, and you sent me your books, and the book that I absolutely fell in love with was Down Solo, about a really not-so-great private eye. I mean, maybe he was a good private eye, but, you know, he was a drug addict.
He's a loser.
And he just was a loser. He really was
a loser.
And the book opens with him waking up in the morgue, which in itself was just such a stunning surprise. He's dead, but he wakes up.
Yeah.
I thought that the premise was so outrageous and so much fun and so great that I blew through that book, as you well know, you and I talked about it before, in like an afternoon. I loved it. Here you are a couple of years later, and now Charlie Miner is back after, getting killed again in Down to
again.
No Good. He's dead again, and I love it. When you first wrote Down Solo, the first Charlie Miner book, did you know, Dan, that you were going to write him maybe again? Had you any idea or any thought about that?
I had absolutely no idea. As a matter of fact, the first page just spilled out. I'm not a supernatural reader. The idea of a guy waking up in a slab and reanimating himself just came to me, the whole drug thing. It came out in a page and then 10 pages, and then I got paralyzed for a year because I didn't know what to do with it. So I had no idea where it was going, even for the book length, let alone a sequel.
Well, I have to tell you, it was one of the best romps I've ever read. It is kind of, you know, pulpy, noir, supernatural, you know, kind of a mashup, but not in a mashup way that makes no sense to me. It was so much fun, and Charlie is such a wise ass, and I love anybody who knows me knows I love a wise ass. And I loved his character so much, and it was a very satisfying book. I mean, I was like licking my fingers afterward. It was just a delicious book. And then here we are 2 years later, and he's down to no good. This boy, Charlie, has been killed again. He once again wakes up on the slab, but he's maybe a little more savvy about dying and waking up. Yes or no?
Well, he hasn't solved the why of it or the how of it, and I'm pretty sure that's unsolvable. I hope it's not my job as his creator to even explain it, because obviously it's inexplicable. But then so is the idea of a demon dressed up as a clown in a sewer inexplicable.
Sure.
So we don't need to go there, explanation wise. But yes, first of all, I wrote this in Charlie's point of view, first person and present tense, to put you in his head so that he's actually trying to puzzle out what is this about? It's bizarre. I don't understand it, but it makes it, I hope, slightly more acceptable, because we have this suspension of disbelief problem. That's every author's problem to overcome. So I think putting you in his head is what makes it work, because otherwise it's just over the top.
Well, how interesting that you said you're putting the reader in his head, because one of the first scenes in the book involves us literally being in his head when he's pushing bullets out of his head. I have to tell you, I had to laugh because most people don't know, but in my former profession, I was a physical therapist, and so I'm familiar with all of those terms, the medical terms that you use, and I was so impressed by, I was impressed by all the medical jargon you used. You must have done some kind of research to know, you know, all of those, the terminology, but you also have such a great imagination of him, like, forcing bullets out. How did that happen? How did you know what to write medically about Charlie's condition?
Well, I definitely Googled some terms as to brain cellular structure and genetic, gene propagation, things like that. I had to Google and then reassemble into something hopefully intelligible for the passage. But the original idea was that he could, you know what, I mean, think about it. Yogis can do remarkable things that the rest of us can't do. I mean, advanced yogis, you read about being able to do strange things. I knew a guy once that could say, point to a place on his arm, and you'd look at it, and he would make the blood congeal there so that it was bright red where you pointed. He didn't even know how he did it. Salamanders can regenerate limbs. So all that information is tucked away somewhere in our DNA. We know how to do stuff. So I just took it another level, and since he can leave his body, that's one of his odd traits, and re-enter it, I had him go into the wound and from inside himself do the reconstruction job. It just all kind of fell into place. It took a little bit of research, and it was a lot of fun to write. And in fact, to write twice because he does it in each book.
Right. So let me ask you this, just, you know, because I'm a reader who loves your writing style and I love the story. Mm-hmm. Is Charlie getting stronger or weaker?
Well, he's definitely getting stronger. Charlie is becoming aware of not only of his condition, but the terms of his condition. And that's maybe the main theme in the book is that he has a mentor, Daniel, who is trying to shepherd him through the oddness of his experience. And Daniel is telling him, look, your ability to live again in spite of what's happened to you is a gift, but you don't get to keep it unless you participate in some work here. And the work is eventually that, okay, here's a giveaway for the third book,
it's a pay it forward moment, right?
That's right, yes. Right.
I love the fact that his daughter is more involved this time because Charlie, for all his flaws, and there are many, absolutely adores his daughter, doesn't he?
Well, pretty much all he's got at some point in the book, yes.
It's an interesting dichotomy with him, this guy who is trying to figure out how to be dead and still party like there's no tomorrow with any substance he could find that maybe hopefully is going to get him stoned, yet he wants to be a good dad. I love that about Charlie's character, and we learn a little bit more about him in Down to No Good than we did in the first book. When the next book comes out, will we learn even more about his personality, do you think?
Well, I think in the next book, which will be called, going along with the theme, the next one will be Down and Out Cold, and we will be sending Charlie to we'll be sending Charlie to Alaska because and the money that he hopefully, the money that he's made so far will be gone,
right,
and he has to follow it. Well, will we know more about him? First of all, I don't think it's going to be a drug and alcohol romp like this one. He's going to be past that and maybe just more straightforward PI, except for his special ability, which is to
Amazing.
Leave his body and gain information.
It's so much fun to read this book. It's kind of, I don't know, I read it as a straight noir character and book simply because noir is defined by the guy who can't get out of his own way and is his worst enemy, right?
Right.
But
right.
And it's a little bit pulpy because it's short enough to have a condensed story that is so full of mischief, yet I am fully appreciating Charlie Minor and all his little nuances, and I think Charlie Minor is finally seeing all these different sides of his personality. Have I missed the mark?
You have not missed the mark. I would like to throw in, though, that there's also a theme there. I hope I didn't hammer it too hard. It looks like I didn't because you haven't brought it up about the condition of our drug epidemic in our country and what I'm going to call our ridiculous national policy toward it.
Yeah, just say no. which has worked so well for all these years, right? And
that's
let's
right.
incarcerate
sure.
everyone. And I get what
that's
you're
right.
saying, and we won't go to the politics of our policy,
no.
but yes, I agree with you. I want to talk about you a little bit, Dan, a.k.a. Earl Jaworski. You are, I love the fact that you are an Irish immigrant. You were born in Ireland, but you have this very, I don't know, French last name.
let's back up on that. I was born in Berlin.
Berlin, sorry.
So Ireland.
But
such a
delightful Spanish last name, maybe, Jaworski, right?
Jaworski being Polish, yeah.
Right. So you've kind of melded all of your different DNA to create Earl Jaworski, and I appreciate that. But you yourself have had a very interesting background. You were a teacher. You've published novels. You've created strategically optimized content blogs and feature articles and web pages, and you've taught it music. You were a writer in Hollywood. You've been an editor and a proofreader, and you know you've done all these different things. How has all this congealed to make you who you are today?
Right. Okay. We left out two big ones there, so let me just put them out there.
Okay.
I was a wannabe musician, trying to be a rock star in Hollywood. And I was funding that being a drug dealer. And I did that for a long time.
Can I just interrupt and say, wasn't that a given? Wasn't everyone trying to be a rock star and then a drug dealer out in Hollywood?
It's like being an actor and then you're a waiter, right?
Exactly. I mean, this is the noir culture, and so I just – it was an assumption. I beg your pardon on that. Please go forward.
The thing is, my weird characters, my crazy characters, the dilemmas they get into, Charlie's world, that's all drawn from people I knew and the culture I lived in for way too many years, just about killed me. But that's primarily it. I just drew from the craziness of the drug world and got so many stories. And then in the recovery world, you get to... You know, I go hear people tell stories all the time. You just hear the most bizarre stories in the recovery world.
Right.
The most bizarre feature being that these people are still alive.
Still alive, right. Now, I want to ask you about something that I'm fascinated by, because when I was reading your bio and doing some research, you mentioned the Seismological Society of America. How does that fit in? I don't understand that. How does that fit in? It's nowhere. I don't see the nexus here.
Oh, gosh, it's just one of my credentials or part of my history, work history in the proofreading and editing world, which is that I had a gig for quite a while as a proofreader for the National, Seismological Society. It's a bunch of geologists whose specialty is in earthquake science.
Well, that's what I thought.
And And they have a lot of very technical papers written by Italian and Japanese and so on scientists that have very good English but need some help. And so that would be offloaded to independent contractors like me to polish up the language.
I want to wind back a little bit more to one of your first books called Trust Me, which you graciously
uh-huh.
signed and sent to me. Let's talk
uh-huh.
about that book. Tell listeners
sure.
about it.
I'm sorry?
Tell listeners about it.
Well,
sure.
Okay. As a member, again, of the recovery community, I became aware in Los Angeles of a predator. He was a guy in his late 60s, and he would basically come on to very young, attractive women that were new to recovery and pretend to mentor them, but he would wind up seducing them. It was really inappropriate and unattractive. And so I thought, well, this guy, if we just take him one step further and make him dispose of his victims after the fact and make it look like a string of suicides, we have a story there. And so I went with that.
Is it relevant now, do you think, to all the Me Too posts that are coming
relevant?
Out?
It's relevant. Well, you know what? In that larger context, it is. Again, back to the recovery community itself, there are big problems with predation.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, there's a woman up in Los Angeles. She got so outraged by the whole thing that she left the community and made a movie about it called The 13th Step, which makes the whole community look like a cesspool of this kind of thing, which I don't think it is. But there's a perception out there by people that like her stuff that it's a bigger
sure.
problem. But it's enough of a problem that it certainly needs addressing. People need to feel safe.
I want to just say, if you want to say hi to Dan Howard, a.k.a. Earl Jaworski, please give us a call at 347-633-9609. I'm going to gift you a copy of his new book if you call me now. So, Dan, tell me about your process of writing. You are a very meticulous writer, but you're also
yeah.
a very meticulous researcher, I know from this book. But
uh-huh.
you take your time. You're not in any hurry to put content out there until you're sure it's perfect. You and I have been talking about this book for 6 months,
right.
I think, right?
Right.
Why is that?
Well, gosh, it's simply because I have a very poor work ethic. I'm very undisciplined. I do not have a set time where I write. I don't write a lot and then clean it up afterward. Because I work as an editor and a proofreader, I pretty much know I don't want to have to fix something afterwards, so I edit paragraph by paragraph. Sometimes
really?
There's a structural glitch, I'll go, oh yeah. And if there's this big structural glitch, my editor will point it out, and I'll go back and fix it. But there hasn't been anything, no huge suggestions for him. I've never had to do deep surgery on a book. But I can go weeks, I can go months without doing anything, and then suddenly I'll get inspired, I guess you'd call it, and stuff will pour out. And then I get stuck again. It's just my pattern. It's not highly productive in terms of churning out new work. Maybe I should fix that. What do you think, Pam?
Well, no, I actually think that what you're turning out is quality. And so maybe it's not quantity by your definition, but it is certainly is
right.
quality. And, you know, I told you when you sent me the arc, the galley, I was so,
yeah.
I immediately texted you. I told you that. I said,
right.
I love this book. And
right.
It's great. It's fun. It's a fun read. It's a serious read. It's a noir
uh-huh.
read, and it's a pulpy read. And it's not a difficult read, but it's a riveting read. And that, to me, you know, is a sign of a really successful book. This book, Down and No Good, is 220 pages.
It is.
It's not a huge novel, but it's fully packed with action from jump. It really is. How do you write so sparingly? It's every writer's dream to write as sparingly as you do.
I am a big fan of not only Elmore Leonard, who says, of course, try to leave out the parts that readers tend to skip.
People don't want to read. Exactly.
But I'm also a big fan of the anti-Elmore Leonard, which, of course, is James Lee Burke, who is one of the only writers who, when he describes the sunset, I will probably not skim, but read him because it's so well done. But I tend to write more.
Because he'll be here in a couple of weeks, so you will listen to him.
Oh, good.
James is a fun author to talk to. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
But I agree with you. It's interesting. It is, you know, you're at one spectrum from the other, like you just described. You want sparing. James Lee Burke, however, his prose, his narrative, sucks you in, and that's not supposed to be what drives readers, but it does, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And his insight into human nature.
Yeah. Yeah, he's amazing. And his daughter is amazing, too, Alifair. She's lovely, by the way. Dan, will you continue after the next book to use Charlie Minor as your series character, or do you think you're ready to kind of toss the balls in the air and see what lands?
I have a separate idea entirely, and it's a father-son novel. It also takes place in the underground, the drug world. It has a tragic element to it. I hope it has a redemption element to it. It's going to be difficult to write. It's based on some personal experience, and I hope I can pull it off. So far, I just have a basic structure and some notes.
Is it true what they say that you write what you know?
I would find it awfully hard to write what I don't know. I suppose if you're a science fiction writer, you can go off into, or fantasy, I guess if you read enough of that, then you kind of know alternate worlds as well as the real world that you really know. But I got to stick to what I know.
So I don't know if it's safe to assume or not safe to assume, but would you ever want to try any other genre?
Well, you know, the father-son book will be different in that I'm thinking more along the lines of Don Winslow something mainstream but intelligent.
More to
so it'll be
literary
outside of,
rather
it'll
than
be outside
genre.
Of the hard boiled, or it won't be noir or hard boiled or that kind of thing.
Right.
Call it more serious. Not that these aren't serious. I hope there's something a serious element to them, but it won't be a fun book. I'll tell you that. It'll be gratifying if I can pull it off.
So let me ask you this: Do you enjoy the writing process? You sound like it's almost painful. With the fact, and the reason I say that, and I may be totally off base, but that you will like go away for months and then you'll come back to it or whatever, is writing like kind of opening up the wound and pouring it out, or is it joyful for you?
Not writing is okay. When I get to it, it's fabulous. I have so much fun with it. Once I get an idea as to where to go next, I run with it, and I got the wind at my back, and everything's great. When the wind is not at my back, and I have to think, it's pretty much like that spigot has been turned off, and I just I can't push beyond whatever limitation I have there. Now, some people just go, you write 20 pages a day, no matter what, and then you take what you can out of it. It's not my process.
Interesting. Overall, do you like the process of writing? Or
what?
I'm not really sure. I mean, your books are so unusual and so different. So I'm not really sure. Is it something you run toward, or is it something you're holding back from and it pulls you in? What is writing to you?
Well, When it's work, I don't do it. When it's play, I run with it. Not from it, but with it. So, again, that's not very professional.
Isn't that okay, though? I mean, isn't writing an individual thing, for lack of a better word, writing is individual to each writer, correct?
This will sound like a cliche, but I've come to accept it as my process.
There you go. And, you know, I know that there are some people who say, well, I'll sit down and I'll write one chapter and I'm happy, or I'll sit down and I'll write 1,000 words, or I'll sit down and I'll write one page, or whatever it happens to be. And, you know, that is, or every day I have to sit down and I have to write from 9 to 5, whether it makes any sense or not. But for you, you seem to kind of go when the need grips you. Is that true?
It's been true so far, but it would probably be a good idea for me to try it as a professional or as a grown-up and see if I'm productive that way. So far,
why?
I've resisted that. But
why?
Why have I resisted, or why would it be a good idea?
Why would it be a good idea if it's not you? I mean, if it's not who you are, you know, do you have a timetable laid out for books that you want to publish?
No, but
I love that.
I don't know. It might be the mature thing to do is try something strenuous and against my nature just to see what happens.
But you know what, Dan? Here's the interesting thing to me. Now, you and I have known each other for quite a few years now, and I mean, I think there are a couple different types of people in the world, and those that just want to let it flow, and when it happens, it happens, and those that push the envelope. And you're kind of a let it flow kind of a guy, so maybe do you think if you tried to push the envelope, the creativity would be lacking?
I guess that's for me to find out, Pam, because I really don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same way I approached school, and it didn't get me that far in school. But, you know, I think what I've done so far writing-wise is fun. If the fun leaves because it becomes work, I'm not that motivated to continue that way.
Well, I have to say, the writing that you have done between Trust Me, Down Solo, and Down No Good have been exceptional. Some of the best books that I've ever read. And you know me well enough to know that I read a lot of books. And
I'm not in the minority.
Your books straight across the board are 5-star reviews. I mean, you've gotten amazing, amazing reviews, not only from readers, but from other authors, from my friend Jeff Parker and Lou Burney and my friend Les Edgerton and many, many more. Congratulations on that. You know, so let's finish up this interview by let me asking you the final 5 questions, okay? Did we do this before when I talked to you a couple of years ago, final 5 quick questions, 5 quick answers? I don't know if I did.
Okay,
so here we go. What do you do in your spare time when you're not writing? What do you do for fun?
Oh, gosh. I hang out with my wife a lot. We have a lot of fun. I play basketball pretty much every night. I've gone surfing 3 or 4 times in the last 10 days because it's been big surf out here. So, my spare time is full. I can't imagine how people work and still have fun. I just don't know how people work.
There you go. Well, work should be fun. That we know.
Well,
what kind of music do you like to listen to? Because I know you are a musician, and so what do you like to listen to?
I still like roots, Americana, blues-based folk. That's what I like most. I like world music.
Good.
I'm still kind of a sucker for traditional reggae. There's some, you know, jazz. I pretty much
start with
Miles
Davis. You need to come to Florida if you like reggae.
And
we're like a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Yeah. So in jazz, I pretty much start with Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, and end with Weather Report. If there's anything newer, I haven't heard
it. Oh, gosh, really? Weather Report. Gosh, I haven't heard that since. Oh, well, I don't want to date myself. Whose book are you reading right now? Yeah, we did. Whose book are you reading right now?
Okay, I just last night finished Alison Galen's And She Was, which interested me because...
Alison is great, isn't she?
Well, and interested me because her character was very much like Charlie Minor in that everything, like a lot of the backstory, came as memories. Her character has a perfect memory, can't get rid of memories. Charlie has an impaired memory and has to work to recover them. But structurally, it's very similar. And that's what interested
me. Alison is amazing. I love that girl. Uh-huh. I do. I really do. And I love all of her books. Good choice.
And next is Scott Adlerberg's,
Scott, it's on my bedside
table. And I'm just blanking on the name, darn it. Sorry, Scott.
That's okay. So let me ask you this. What would we be surprised to learn about you?
What would someone be surprised to learn about me? Oh, my.
Yep.
That's a tough call. I just don't even know. I don't know.
Okay. We'll skip it. Yeah. You can come back and send me an email and I'll post it. Okay, so Dan, your wife and I are having a conversation, and she and I decide we're going to write a book about your life. What are we going to title it?
Oh, my goodness.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness, could be it,
There you go.
Right.
So that's so funny. Tell listeners where we can find you on Amazon and every place else, please.
Okay, Noel, www.earljavorsky, that's JAVORSKY.com. Facebook, I'm pretty sure, even though you say you couldn't find it, Earl Jaworski, author, should bring me up.
Okay.
Facebook.
Well,
and
I can find
at
it.
Earl
it's
Jaworski.
Just because I know you, and, you know, we talk all the time.
Okay.
So.
Right. So, and Twitter, which I'm hopeless at Earl Jaworski will somehow get to me. Is that right? Is that how that works? I don't even know.
It is. It is at Earl Jaworski for sure. Will you come back and talk to me again, please?
I'd love to.
I love talking to you. I have so much fun when you're here. Will you come back and maybe be a guest host one night?
I certainly
hope to do that. You know what? An interview someone like Les, you know, our mutual friend.
That would
Les.
Be fun. I have Les's autobiography. Kindle,
oh,
not
I
even
have
Kindle.
Les's everything. Les is crazy as a loon. You know that. I love Les Edgerton.
Yeah.
He knows that. He knows that he has my heart, and I have his. Come back and interview Les, okay?
Let me read his book first. It's very long, so I'm just going
to
start.
You don't even have to.
Days.
You just ask Les. You know what you say, Les? What's going on? And that's it. You never have to say anything else, okay?
That's true too. Okay, I know, but I own
author Earl Jaworski, aka Dan Howard, my friend for many years now. I'm very, very honored to know him. Thank you for being with me, my friend.
Oh, thanks so much, Pam.
We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Bye bye.
Good night. And thanks for being with me. Tomorrow night is very special. I have a man named Robert Hayden, who is a musician who played with Steve Miller and Boz Scaggs. You don't want to miss it. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.